It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, welcome to the special Biltmore Rose Trials edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, we're glad you've joined us today. We've got a great show lined up for you. Teresa and I were honored to be a part of the second annual Biltmore International Rose Trials that were held just a few weeks ago in the walled garden of the magnificent Biltmore Estate. Now, as you can imagine, we had the opportunity to chat with some of the nation's top rose enthusiasts. So you can hear firsthand their impressions of the roses and, just their overall feeling about being a part of such a prestigious rose trial.
Oh, and it is prestigious. It truly was our great pleasure to be a part of this event that's so important to the wonderful world of roses. The Biltmore Garden is truly rose fairyland, and I would say to our listeners, if you haven't been to the Biltmore, add it to your list of must-sees. The garden is usually at its peak in May and then again in September right here. And tonight we'll be chatting with Paul Zimmerman of Paul Zimmerman Roses. Paul's the coordinator of these trials, and he's here to tell us all about why these trials are important and what we can expect to see in the future. So stay with us. Paul's in the virtual studio ready to go, and he'll be joining us after this quick word from Rose Mania.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mites, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
I'm Parker Andes. I have the wonderful opportunity to be the Director of Horticulture here on Biltmore Estate. For me, the rose trials, these international rose trials, showcases the talent of the staff and this historic sense of place and the nature of the landscapes that were developed back in the 1800s for George Vanderbilt for his country estate. When you look at the 1890 drawings for where the rose garden is now, and you can see there were roses meant from the very start in that same location, we don't do anything different. They use the latest varieties. We're with these rose trials looking at the latest varieties. They were talking about what they could do with roses, how much time they could spend with it with the gardeners, because that same issues that we have today, there's only so many hours in a day. And that's what we're doing with these international rose trials, is finding some of these great roses, not just for us, but for everybody. But we're a little selfish. A lot of it's for us, too.
Yeah.
Wasn't it great to hear from Mr. Andy sharing his thoughts on the insights of the Rose Trials, that they're a fulfillment of the work started by Mr. Vanderbilt himself? Well, now it's time for the man of the hour at the Biltmore and on Rose Chat, Paul Zimmerman. Hey, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Well, hello, hello. How are you guys doing?
We're great. And Paul, how does it feel to be able to say the second annual Biltmore Rose Trials were a big success?
Well, it's a bit surreal. I mean, I never quite honestly thought we'd see the first one. it feels great. It really does. And I will say that, when I started these trials, I've been wanting to do a Rose Trials, on international style Rose Trials on the East Coast for quite a while. The only other one in the United States is on the West Coast at Rose Hills, and it's a terrific trial. And when I approached Biltmore, I had complete confidence that, in terms of the ability to pull something like this off. I mean, Biltmore, if anybody can do it, Biltmore can do it. But still, the first one, you're a little nervous and a little unsure about how it's going to be received and what are people going to think about it and, you know, and things like that. And this one was so much more comfortable because, you know, we've already been through it once. We know what went well. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of knew the drill. And but, I mean, it was wonderful, and we couldn't have had a more beautiful day. And the garden was absolutely spectacular.
Oh, it was. And I would say you picked a perfect place. It's just a magical place. It was a magical weekend. It just couldn't have been held in a more beautiful setting. You know, Parker talked about the staff at the Biltmore and the care these roses receive. Could you comment on the team that takes care of the roses?
Yeah, and I'll get as many names as I can, and I apologize if I leave anybody out. Obviously, Parker needs to be recognized. Parker's director of horticulture on the Biltmore Estate. And he's the one I first approached about the idea of the trials. We've known each other for quite a while. And to Parker's credit, you know, when I approached him about the idea of a rose, international rose trials, he said, yes, you do it. And then he asked, the second question was, what is an international-style rose trial? You know, he jumped right in and really realized, you know, the value of this, and like he said, not only to Biltmore, as he said in his interview, but also to gardeners in general. Suzanne Woodall, who's manager of Historic Gardens over there, is terrific. She's really been behind this. And, you know, this has put some pressure on her team as well. Travis Murray is obviously involved. And, of course, I think the main person that we have to talk about with the Rose Garden, I think, you know, when people talk about the difference they see in the Rose Garden, and a lot of it's been the work that we've put in over the last 3 or 4 years, changing varieties and, you know, working to try to recreate the aesthetic. You know, Lucas Jack deserves an enormous amount of credit because, well, I can sit there and come up with the idea for the trials and run the trials and contact the breeders and do that kind of stuff and kind of help with input. Someone's got to be in that garden every day doing it. And Lucas deserves full props for that.
Beautiful job that he does.
He really does, yeah.
Paul, one of the main questions we hear is about the care these roses receive. Could you address that on what really goes on there in the care of these roses?
Yeah, the care of these roses, when I came up with the idea for these trials, you know, I wanted to replicate something that would be more relatable to the home garden. To me, there was no point in having a trial where, you know, they're being sprayed weekly or every 2 weeks, agricultural chemicals that the home gardener can't buy because, you know, there's a real disconnect in my mind in that aspect. So I wrote the protocols for this as a sustainable trial. And in essence, what we use, I mean, we use mostly natural products, you know, pretty close to organics. And basically, you know, we do a fall granular or spring granular or late summer granular. They're done hit with a seaweed-type product every other week and a couple of other things, but they're not really coddled. And that's the whole point, because if you're coddling the roses, then there's absolutely no way to actually test them for a trial. And it's interesting because we can pretty much see, you know, each trial period is 2 years, and we can pretty much see within the first six months which ones are going to make it and which ones aren't. But the idea is to do a natural protocol, something that the home gardener can replicate without a lot of money, without a lot of fuss, without a hazmat suit. Those are the three things that I was after.
That is such good news for the backyard gardener because their time is limited and they don't have a lot of money maybe to spend, but they still want beautiful roses. So what a gift to backyard gardeners in general.
Yep.
Oh, I wanted to touch on the process of a rose trial. Can you explain how it's set up, how the entries are received, that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, I mean, the international style rose trials sort of come under a loose guidance ship from the World Federation of Rose Societies. That's sort of the umbrella organization over all the world's rose societies, like the American Rose Society, for example, which is ours. Mm-hmm. And so there's, you know, I contacted them. I knew some people who ran some other trials, Helga Brachet, who runs trials in Italy, for example. Got some of the rules in. I've judged trials before, so I have an idea what they're about. And sort of adapted the rules a little bit for Biltmore. I did a couple of unique things we can talk about in a little bit. But essentially, I wrote the rules and, you know, the protocols, like we talked about just now, and how they're cared for and things along those lines. Then what I did was I just went in there and I just, you know, I invited rose breeders. I put word out on, you know, the Amateur Hybridizers Association website, you know, contacted Connor Pyle and Weeks and David Austin and all these people that, you know, I've met a lot of, been fortunate to meet a lot of these people over the years. And just started putting the word out. And I'll tell you, it was a really pinch-me moment was I emailed Steve Hutton an invitation, who's the CEO of Connor Pyle. I know you've had him on the show before. And 2 hours later, I had an email, and he said, we accept, we're in. And I was just like, now I'm starting to feel pretty good about this stuff. So that's how it begins. So I send out these invitations, and those usually go out probably, you know, I'll put them for next year. I'll start putting them out in the next month or so for planting for the 2015 trials that we plant this spring. Then they respond to me. They're limited to 3 varieties per breeder. So, for example, Connor Pyle, they could enter 3 from Bill Rattler. They could enter 3 from, you know, another breeder that they work with, like Jim Sproul, for example. And we do that to try to make sure that everybody has access to the trial. Otherwise, you can get a little bit overwhelmed and a little bit swamped. So that's the thing. So then they email me back. Because Biltmore in the walled garden, we don't have unlimited room. We try to keep it to 30 to 35 entries. I've judged some trials, like the Hague, as many as 60 entries. But we only have a certain amount of room. So it's first come, first serve. They come in. Then once I know what they are, then Lucas and I are communicating on a constant basis. And quite outside of Lucas and I, no one really knows what the entries are. We don't really want to share that with anybody. So then the roses are allowed to arrive beginning in around the end of January. We pretty much close that window off around April 1st. All the roses come into the Biltmore estate. Lucas then takes and pots every single one of them in a 3-gallon container. And the idea being we accept anything from a 1-gallon on root to obviously a full-size bare root. Then they go out in the garden in May, and that's when the whole process begins.
Well, it's a good process, and it works. You know, while we were there, we caught up with Rosaria and Linda Cobb, who was a judge at the trial. So let's listen to what she had to say about the rose trial process.
The rose trials at Biltmore House are very interesting. First of all, there are not very many rose trials at all in this country. And I think it's a big deal because I'm here to promote roses, and I think every homeowner can grow roses easily, and they don't know that. They have this wall up about how difficult it is. So the trials are helping us learn how to grow roses, and it's making us able to select better roses for the homeowners, and it's a really good deal.
She's right, it really is a good deal. Now, I know there's a difference between the permanent jury and the International Assembly of Jurors. Could you address that?
Yeah, the permanent jury, I mean, they actually judge the roses 4 times a year, which means they judge the roses 8 times over each 2-year trial period. And for obvious reasons, they're people who live close. You know, because they need to get up to the Biltmore 4 times a year. And the permanent juror that I put together for this trial, I sort of went outside the box a little bit. I didn't just use, you know, people who grow a lot of roses or people who are, for example, American Rose Society horticultural judges who judge, you know, rose shows, but who judge the flower, because it's important to remember that we're judging the entire plant. So I've got a combination of some ARS people. We have Rebecca Reed, who is the former gardening editor for Southern Living magazine. And I've got folks who are just very talented backyard gardeners who I've known for years. And so it's a nice broad mix for the permanent jury. Then the international jury tends to be more rose royalty, for lack of a better word. You know, the president of the American Rose Society, Jolene Adams, Vice President Pat Shanley, last year Steve Jones, president of the World Federation of Rose Societies. And that tends to be more some folks along those lines. And they can come from literally all over the world. And they come in for that one particular day where they judge on the day that we actually give the awards themselves. So the permanent jury tends to be a little bit closer. They live closer. And, you know, also that's the advantage of the people who grow roses in this climate. So they're more familiar with what the pressure that this climate has on roses.
But that makes the group very diversified, and I think it brings a richness to the whole process to have so many different people taking a look at these roses.
Yeah, and that was my goal with the whole thing. It was, you know, I didn't want just people who looked at them from one prism. I wanted it really a broad range because, again, you know, we're picking roses based on their overall appearance, the shrub, the plant, and the leaves, the foliage, not just the flower. And that's why I just really wanted this broad group of folks.
Mm-hmm. Well, while we were there, we had the opportunity to talk to one of our favorite Rose Chat podcast guests, Lynn Hunt. She's a noted author and a great rosarian, one of those rosarians that you talked about. And she had this to say about the judging process from a year-round perspective.
I thought there was a wonderful selection of roses this year. Most of them had virtually no disease, which was amazing because they're not treated in any way. No fungicides are used.
So I was very impressed with that, and the quality of many of the blooms and the number of blooms was quite amazing.
Right. Now, I understand you were here in January and did a round of judging as well. In comparison to what you saw today in January, do you think the shrubs are coming along very well? They survived the winter?
Well, Chris, it's hard to judge fragrance in January. But basically, we were looking at the bush itself to see how it was managing during the winter. And the state of the bush, if it had any foliage, if there was any disease on the foliage and so forth. But, of course, there are no blooms at that time. And it was very, very cold. We had below zero temperatures. So I was quite impressed that many of them looked very good. And I understand even after the last freeze, late freeze that we had in this area, in the Asheville area, that almost all of them bounced right back.
What a great perspective she has from being there all year long. Hey, I understand we have a question from the chat room. Chris, are you in the chat room?
I am. We have a question from a Rose Chat regular. Her name's Rebecca, and she wants to know, Paul, how many roses are needed per variety to be entered into the rose trial?
We need six roses. We need six plants per variety. That's all that we need. And one of the things that we've done differently, and I'm really proud about this, so I'm going to shout it out a little bit. Most trials will only take bare root plants. Well, that involves growing something in a field for 2 years, which your average, quote-unquote, amateur hybridizer can't produce. Because Biltmore has cold frames and things like that, and people like Lucas, we can actually take 1 gallon own root plants. And that's something that I love, because that means we've got people who are not well-known hybridizers, and the women this year is a perfect example.
Absolutely.
We're competing against really established hybridizers. And the winner this year actually came into the trials as 6 1-gallon own root plants. And so I set that up because I know that any backyard breeder can produce 6 1-gallon plants. They come in January, Lucas grows them in the cold frame for 4 months, and they all go out the same size. So we use 6 of 1 variety. That's all we need.
It's a great question, Rebecca. Thanks for putting it out there.
Well, while we were there, we also ended up with another friend, Ben Hanna from Heirloom Roses, and he was one of the breeders who entered the trial, so he had a different perspective, and here's what he had to say about the roses and his entries.
Hello, my name is Ben. I'm with Heirloom Roses. We are pleased to be here at the Biltmore Rose Trials today, experiencing the beautiful weather and the beautiful new roses that are being evaluated. It's fun to see such strikingly beautiful roses in great health.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you entered a few roses in this trial, haven't you?
We did. We had three roses that were entered 3 years ago now, and they're doing well. I think that our roses didn't come in in the best shape, but they're coming alive now and looking good. We're excited about them.
That's great. You know, roses are like that. Sometimes they take a year or two to get established in the garden, and before
mm-hmm.
you know it, they're pow.
Yeah, and the newer varieties that we're introducing right now are fantastic, very disease-resistant and superbly healthy.
You know, I don't think a lot of people know just how much time and dedication it takes to bring a new rose to market. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Paul?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. You know, the average for a breeding program, you know, just one that works on a fairly regular basis, like, you know, Christopher Dart at Weeks or Bill Ravitz or Connard Pyle or David Austin, for example, from the time that they actually do their cross and get a seedling and then take that seedling through evaluation and then, you know, through trials in the fields, you've also got to test the rose to see how it does in a pot in a garden center. Does it finish well? Does it look good? It's all these things that you've got to put it through. It's anywhere from 8 to 10 years before a rose is finally introduced. And that's a long time. And David Austin, which is one of the larger breeding programs in the world, for example, he'll start with like something like around 200,000 to 300,000 seedlings in any given year. And 10 years later, maybe 3 to 4 actually make it to market. So it's an amazing amount of work and focus that really goes into it to breeding roses. Because, you know, it's nature. It's agriculture. You can't just, you know, turn on a spigot and roses start pouring out. It doesn't work that way.
Oh, wouldn't it be great if it did? You know, I hear the statistics over and over by people we've had on the show, and it still just astounds me. So
it really is, yeah. Yeah, it's really important. And that's also why it's important, too, for folks to understand that you know, new roses are patented for a reason, and there's a reason why people ask you not to, you know, take cuttings and pass them on to your neighbors, because the royalties that go back to the breeders are what pay for those programs. You know, without breeders, we won't have new roses. So, but it's my hat's off to breeders. I mean, I think they're the heroes of the rose world. It's just incredible the work they put into it.
It sure is. Well, it's that time. Can we get a drum roll? Well, I don't think we have a drum, but it is time to talk about the sustained list of winners, and no one knows them better than you, Paul. So first up, let's talk about the big winner, Miracle on the Hudson, the winner of four awards, including the most outstanding rose of the show. Very impressive. Tell us about this rose.
Yeah, it's a great rose. It won Outstanding Rose of the Show. It won Disease Resistant, I think Best Growth Habit. And I know I'm missing one more here, too, and Best Shrub. Yeah, this was bred by a gentleman named Robert Neil Ripito, who's out in California. It's available through Roses Unlimited at the moment, even though I think you'll see it in wider distribution later. It makes this wonderful shrub about 3 to 4 feet high. The blooms are a really beautiful reddish color. They're single, so, you know, you're not going to get that fully petaled aspect. The health is absolutely amazing on this thing. I've been impressed with it from the moment it hit the trials. You can tell that this thing was going to be good. And I just like the growth habit. It's a tidy habit. It doesn't seem to want to get way out of hand. And what we liked about it as well was it held that color and it held that great foliage even during the judging that we do in July, August, which we call the judging of the dog days of summer. And again, this goes back to the fact this is the rose I was talking about earlier. This is the one Robert Neil Ripito, who's been hybridizing roses for a while. So I'm not saying he's an amateur breeder because I actually don't like that word. He's an undiscovered breeder, so that one instead. But these came in as 6 1-gallon own root plants, and we took the best in show.
It was great. And I'm impressed that this rose was awarded the most disease-resistant. Don't you hear more and more people wanting sustainable, disease-resistant roses?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's where the trend is going. And I think it's going not just in roses, but in gardening in general. I mean, I think you've got a generation coming up that are reading, you know, what some of these chemicals can do, and a lot of chemicals are coming off the market. But, you know, you've got people out there gardening, and they've got vegetable gardens, and but they've also got children, they've got pets, and they're starting to think, you know, do I want all this stuff on my lawn when my kids are out there playing? And what I love about an award like this is that we can show that, you know, using sustainable methods, we can grow roses, because roses have always had the reputation of being the most difficult plant. And my feeling is that we can show that you can grow roses sustainably. Well, everything else just follows right along with it. But you're absolutely right. Disease resistance is the main thing people are looking for right now. And I'm glad. I think it's good.
Yeah. You know, Paul, we had an opportunity to chat with Rebecca Reed. I believe she was a garden editor at Southern Living for a while. And let's see. Greg, do we have that clip queued up that we could hear what Rebecca had to say about disease resistance?
I am amazingly impressed with how disease-free plants in the trial are this year. Even though we're going through and we're being very critical, I would say that 95% of the plants that we saw were really clean and got high scores. So that attests to the breeding that's done. And then when you reiterate the fact that everything is grown organically, sustainably, that's huge.
She is absolutely right. That is huge. And you think that people today don't want those chemicals. And the roses out of this trial are demonstrating that it can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. They are. And this trial and other trials as well. I mean, it's really nice to see that, you know, roses are finally getting the reputation that they can be grown with other plants as flowering shrubs, and they don't need a lot of extra fuss and don't need a lot of extra care. And, you know, I'm thrilled. I mean, I love seeing what's coming out of these trials. And it's been interesting. Every single year, you know, we're now in our fourth year of planting. Every year they get healthier and healthier and healthier.
Good news. Truly good news for all of us. You know, I'm a huge fan of bourbon roses, so let's move on and talk about the stunning Arnolene Day Brabant, who won for Best Established Rose. Tell us about her.
Yeah, honoreen is best established as something that we do. It's kind of a fun award. I first got introduced to it when I was judging trials from The Hague. Basically what you do is Lucas and I will literally Friday morning wander through the garden with five signs numbered 1 through 5 and find roses that have been in the garden for quite a while that are looking good that day. And Honorine de Brant got it this year, which I love. It's a lovely old bourbon, obviously from the 1800s. She's incredibly fragrant, as all the bourbon roses are. She's striped kind of a white with, you know, like pink, you know, cerise stripes going through her. You get a great spring flowering out of her. She'll shut down a bit in the summer. Then you get a great summer flowering out of her. And she's just one of those classic great roses.
Oh, I got up close and personal several times with this rose, so I can attest to its wonderful old rose fragrance. It'll make a garden sing.
Yeah, it really will. It's a beautiful rose. And, you know, bourbons, people need to keep in mind, you know, you're hardy to probably about zone 6. You know, you can do zone 5 with protection. But it's a great rose. It's one of the classic old garden roses. And I love the fact an old garden rose is my best established.
That's very special. And we're moving on to the Sweet Drift. It's such a lovely rose, and it was the winner of the Frederick Long Olmsted's Award for Best Ground Cover. So tell us a little bit about Sweet Drift.
Yeah, Sweet Drift, part of the Drift Rose series, you know, Popcorn Drift and Peach Drift and Coral Drift and Red Drift, and they're wonderful series. Bred by Mayand in France, one of the most, you know, established and certainly respected rose breeding firms in the world, quite honestly. Distributed by Star Roses and Plants, you can get it anywhere. You know, you're going to get beautiful, you know, these pinkish flowers that stay on this plant that sort of stays prostrate and kind of grows, you know, fairly flat and grows out. I'd use it, for example, like on a hillside or a bank, maybe to line some steps as you're coming down some steps. Hanging baskets make a great hanging basket. You know, these are the kind of roses, these Drift series and the Sweet Drift particularly. You plant it and then just let them spread. Plant them in groups, get 3, 4, 5, and just let them spread out and just let them do their own thing. And they're very rewarding. This has been an outstanding rose from day one. It's been a great one.
I have several Drifts, and I absolutely love them. They do everything that they say that they will do. They are beautiful. They're beautiful all summer. They do hug, and they just form a great border to my rose beds. I just love them. However, I don't have one of the Sweet Drifts, but someone here does.
Well, I have a slight confession.
cough it up.
Yeah, after returning from the Biltmore Rose Trial, Tina and I went out and bought not one, not two, not three, but 7 shrubs of Sweet Drift.
Good for you.
And they have already taken off. You know, it's just been a couple weeks, and we put those in the ground, and they were budding up, and they're in bloom now.
Yeah, and the way you planted them, you know, that's the way to get roses like that, is get them in groups, in the same way you would do perennial or something like that. Don't buy just once. You know, plant them as a mass. Michael Marriott from David Austin Roses has a great philosophy. He says you take them and plant in groups like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You pack them in tight so they grow into each other because, you know, again, they're disease resistant. So let's get this whole air circulation argument that's out there, you know, and let them kind of make one big – and he actually treats them as one huge plant when he prunes them. He just treats them as one enormous plant. And that's what gives that wonderful packed-in mass effect.
Yep, that's going to be pretty, Chris. You've done well there. And, you know, I keep looking on my front porch. I thought you might send me at least one, but nothing's there. Okay, next up is Tequila Supreme, the winner of the Edith Wharton Award for Best Floribunda. And I just love the ruffly edge. Well, it's roughly a word, but the edges are just so pretty. So tell us a little bit about this rose.
Yeah, this was Tequila Supreme, also bred by Mayand in France and pretty much available everywhere. And when you talk about the ruffly edges, that's what's so cool about it. You know, the bloom, while it still has that really, you know, reasonably fully petaled rose form, it's got kind of like ruffled edges around it, which gives kind of a different thing. It's a beautiful, almost a pinky, salmon-y kind of color, but very deep and very rich. And like most Mayand roses, again, very healthy. Because everyone needs to keep in mind that just because a rose didn't win the best disease resistance, because Miracle on the Hudson took that, disease resistance is 25% of the score. So even the best Floribunda had to be disease resistant, otherwise it never would have made it. So this is just a really, really good rose. And again, one of those you want to pack in, you know, 3, 4, 5 at a time, and just let them be this nice, big, cheerful, bright, you know, frilly mass.
Mm-hmm. Very pretty, very pretty. When I saw the next rose we're going to talk about, I immediately started thinking of where I could put this rose in my garden. It was just a mass bloom. And that was Puka, the winner of the Honorable Cecil, John Cecil Award for Open Group. So tell us about Puka.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a little bit about the rose, and I'm going to give you a bit of a personal story with Puka. The rose, it's a polyantha, which is just a class of roses. Probably the fairy is probably one of the better-known ones of that class. The open group is a group that we put in because we know there's people who are, like, you know, Paul Barden breeds new hybrid musks. We've got people breeding polyanthas, and they don't really fit anywhere. So we wanted to make sure that they had a place in these trials. And the judges do know that it's a polyantha as opposed to a hybrid musk. That's the information they do get. Puka is just, you know, if anybody's familiar with the old hybrid musk ballerina, it's going to look a bit like that. They're single-petaled with pink and a white eye. And like you just said, this has been a massive flower from the day it arrived. I remember going up and looking at it in the cold frame before we even planted it out, and it was a mass of flowers. And it just never stops blooming. It's not widely available. There's a nursery called Burlington Roses, a nursery in California. There's mail order. You can get it from there. Puka was entered by the late Jim Delahanty, who was a very dear friend of many of us in the rose world. He was known as Mr. Polyantha. He knew more about him than just about anybody else. And he amassed an amazing collection. And we lost Jim last year. And when this rose won, I was absolutely thrilled when this rose won. And his wife is still alive. And Kim Rupert let Jane Delahanty know. And I got a lovely note from her. And she was just tickled pink. So in memory of our dear friend Jim, we were just tickled pink about Puka.
Oh, what a good story. I'm so glad that
it won. Yeah, he's one of the great people. He really is. Yeah.
I didn't have the pleasure of knowing, but I've heard great things about him.
Everything you've heard squared. He was an amazing, amazing person.
Oh, sweet. Well, Paul, from the minute I arrived at the garden, there was one rose that I just couldn't take my eyes off. When I first saw it, it was a number, but now we know it as Bajazzo, a huge stand-up garden. I bet you hear that a lot.
Yeah, we did. Bajazzo decided to pick a day to just shine. It was unbelievable. This is bred by Cortez, the German firm, who is really has set the bar on disease resistance very high for everybody for, almost three decades now, to be really honest with you. It is a pink with kind of a lemony yellow center, and they open up the blooms again. There's probably a double row of petals, but the mass of bloom that this thing produces is just phenomenal on climate. Very easy to train. I mean, I saw one just recently, actually, at Pat Shanley's garden in New York, and it was probably about 10 feet high. So we're not talking an aggressive climber, which is nice because most gardens are smaller these days. But the amount of bloom, it can just bloom and bloom and bloom and bloom and bloom. And great glossy green foliage, very healthy, very disease resistant. Bajazzo is an outstanding one.
Well, it just was so beautiful. In fact, Chris and I decided to have a rose chat picture in front of it, and it made us look great.
Yes.
I love that.
Or vice versa. You may have made the rose look great. You never know.
I'm not sure about that. We even had some visitors to the Rose Garden stop by to ask us about the rose, and so we were able to talk to them, and it was great, and I think they were, you know, totally enchanted by the rose, and we happened to be there, so it was a great little conversation. It was fun.
You know, Teresa, to me, that was one of the most wonderful things about being involved in this rose trial, and the gardens were open, and folks were milling about while we were judging before and after even. And, you know, we got to strike up some real conversations with folks. I just thought that was incredible.
Oh, it was. It really just was. It was just such a good feeling to be in this beautiful place and to be able to share it with so many of our rose friends, but newcomers too, and people who were just beginning to get, as this couple, just beginning to get into roses. And so that was just really fun. It's very special. Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
Okay, let's move on to the next rose. And what rose lover isn't enchanted by a beautiful hybrid tea? And the Pauline Merrill Award for Best Hybrid Tea went to a beautiful Frances Mayon. Tell us about this beauty.
Yeah, Francis Maillande is, and I'm excited about this rose on several levels. I've known this rose now for 3 or 4 years, even before the trials, and I got some test plants, and it's fragrant, which is lovely. You know, mm-hmm. who doesn't love fragrant roses? Everybody loves fragrance and roses.
Mm-hmm.
It's very healthy, very disease resistant, cuts beautifully for the house. And what I'm liking here, even though roses come in so many different bloom styles. You know, you've got single petaled, you've got doubles like Knockout and things like that. Then you've got the very full old fashioned roses like an Honorine de Brabant or some of the old Gallicas and things like that. But I think most people, certainly over the last 40, 50 years, the image that they have of a rose in their mind is the hybrid tea style bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And hybrid teas, unfortunately, in the 80s and the 90s, were not bred to be particularly healthy. And they're the ones that really took the bad rap, and deservedly so, I'm going to be honest, for most of them, not all, but most of them, in terms of not being the roses that were difficult to grow. Along comes Francis Maillande, also bred by the House of Maillande in France, obviously. Widely available. You've got this incredibly healthy bush with this beautiful classic hybrid tea style bloom, you know, with that high pointed center. It opens gorgeously. It's intensely fragrant and it cuts well. And I'm really excited because I'm thinking that a lot of folks who are kind of on the sidelines who were looking at some of the other roses and say, well, that doesn't look like their image of a rose, which may be a florist rose if you get it Valentine's Day. I'm hoping that Francis Maillande turns people on to coming back in and then discover this broad variety of rose shapes and flowers that we have. But it's an outstanding rose. It's just a great rose. I can't find a fault with it.
It's just beautiful. And it is that classic look that so many people are attached to and look forward to. So I'm hoping that we'll see more of those in the future now that we have Francis Maillande.
Yeah, I think you will. I think you're seeing them come back more and more. I mean, it's you know, I think we got the disease resistance when the Knockout series came out, and I think all roses have, you know, that bar has been set. I think now what you're starting to see layered in, you're starting to see that the fragrance being layered back in again, which is great, and then you're also starting to see now the more fully petaled forms being layered back in on top of that. And again, going back to the early part of the show, it takes 10 years to get a rose to market, so you got to remember, we're judging roses that were probably created originally anywhere from 10 years ago.
Wow. Amazing. Well, we know that so many people want fragrance. We've addressed that. And now we have one more that's going to be uber fragrant. It won the Cornelia Vanderbilt Cecil Award for Most Fragrant Rose, Munstead Wood. It will not disappoint. It's beautiful, and it was so fragrant. Could you talk a little bit about this rose?
Yes, again, bred by David Austin Roses. You know, not a surprise that David Austin Roses won fragrance. We'll say that right now. You know, Mr. Austin has been consistent in his vision from when he did, the very first rose he ever did, Constance Spry, that fragrance has to be a part of what he's always done. And, you know, what I love now, Mr. Austin has certainly been bringing in, you know, his roses have always been relatively healthy, but now he's even raising the bar on it by his own standards. Beautiful, kind of a dark mauvey kind of flower. Obviously the coloration is going to be different depending on your climate. That classic Austin, fully petaled, almost kind of rosette, old-fashioned kind of shape. The flowers were rather large, you know, 4 to 5 inches large. And just, we used to have, when I had my nursery, we used to call these kind of roses big old stinky things. And that's exactly what it is. It's big old stinky things.
Oh, it is so fragrant. And, you know, the form of that flower is just outstanding. Pictures don't even do it justice.
They really don't. If you like fully petaled, old-fashioned, you know, Gallica, Dennis, Centifolia, you know, swirls of petals and that deep kind of like, you know, coloration. I mean, it's a great rose. It's an outstanding rose. And, you know, and it was so obvious. Not a big surprise. I mean, Francis Maillande was close to fragrance, but as fragrant as that is, Munstead Wood even had more.
Mm. Well, Jillian Adams, one of the judges at the trial, also serves as president of the American Rose Society. And she had some comments on the fragrance in roses. So let's listen to Jillian.
The most fragrant rose in that garden was number 1205. We don't know what the name is because it hasn't been introduced yet. It smelled wonderful. It was spicy and sweet all at the same time. And the question has been asked of me, do I think that the industry is going for fragrance again? Is fragrance coming back in roses? And I want to say, fragrance never left roses. We were just hybridizing a whole bunch of roses that didn't have fragrance, and we liked them for other reasons. But fragrance is there. And yes, everyone wants to put their nose in a rose. I grow all fragrant roses in my front yard so that the public can do that, and then they don't take my roses.
Oh, that was great. Wasn't that just perfect?
I love that. Yeah, that's a great, great, great comment. And well, something, too, to think about fragrance. I had a breeder explain this to me once, that the gene in roses that produces disease resistance, some people suspect it actually suppresses fragrance. So when we raised the bar on disease resistance, it took a while to sort of bring the fragrance back in. And now we're seeing that wonderful combination coming back in where you've got fragrance and disease resistance. And I think, to me personally, after disease resistance in this day and age, I think fragrance is probably the number two trait. I mean, a non-fragrant rose is kind of like, that's a little disappointing.
Well, to hear that we're going to have disease resistance and fragrance, that seems to be just what we want to hear.
Well, that's what I am. I always tell people, if you're looking for a group of garden plants, not fussy things that you plant behind a boxwood hedge and, go in and tend to when you sterilize everything you own. If you just want to put garden roses, garden shrubs, if you think about it, the flower form of roses covers everything from single petal to 100 petals. You've got all of that aspect of it. You've got ground covers to roses that grow all the way up trees. And you've got every color of the rainbow with blue. And most of them will bloom from spring to fall. Now, name me another group of garden plants that fulfills those categories. There aren't.
Well said, Mr. Zimmerman, well said.
Well, I should write a book for the page.
True. Well, Polyphilip, we've only scratched the surface of all the wonderful things about this special trial. Are there any closing comments before we draw this broadcast to a close that you'd like to say?
No, I think in regards to the trials, I'm just so proud of Biltmore for stepping up and doing this. I mean, it was a leap of faith for them, and they've done it, but they have a rich horticultural history. I mean, George Vanderbilt, one of the first schools of forestry was on the Biltmore estate. So it mm-hmm. follows through with that. And, I would encourage anyone, even if you can't judge, we judge Memorial Day weekend, come on down and just visit with us. And anyone who's out there breeding roses in your backyard, this is a place for you to get noticed and get judged. So, come and participate. It's something that I'm certainly proud of. And a lot of things in the rose world I'm proud of. This is one of the most.
Well, it's really something to be proud of. And, Paul, as always, it's been our pleasure to have you with us again. And we certainly appreciate all that you do for the wonderful world of roses. And we appreciate the great friend that you are to Rose Chat.
So, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And thanks for having me on, and your check's in the mail.
Well, we appreciate that, too.
No problem.
Well, friends, I hope you've enjoyed tonight's broadcast, a very special broadcast on the Biltmore International Rose Trials. Paul Zimmerman is indeed a friend to backyard gardeners, and I want you to be sure and check out his website, paulzimmermanroses.com. He's on Twitter at pzimmermanroses, and he has a book out. He's a published author. Everyday Roses is available at garden centers, on Amazon, and in your local bookstores. I want to encourage you to go and check out his book. We're at the end of this podcast, but I want you to stay tuned for another edition of the Rose Chat podcast next week. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.